Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning there, Marky.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm actually very excited for the show today. It's a little bit different than many of the shows we do in that we have coming on as a guest in the next segment and for the rest of the show, a guy who's not necessarily a chef or a winemaker, a guy named Michael Fernandez, who's the executive director of the Pew Initiative on Food Biotechnology, which is endowed by the Pew Charitable Trust to be a clearinghouse for unbiased information on biotechnology. And this is a pretty high-ranking, smart dude. We're going to talk to him by phone from his office in Washington, D.C.
As opposed to the restaurant guys who are clearinghouse for actually biased information.
That's us.
We formulate our opinions, and we give them to you. That's what we're all about.
But at least you can see that we do our research before we do now, and we're bringing a primary source on here, and I think that it's going to be a lively discussion. What prompted us to reach out to him was there was a survey conducted by the Melman Group where they found that one quarter of American adults are under the impression that they've never eaten gene-altered food. The only problem is almost all Americans have eaten gene-altered food.
Including you and me, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's it, 90% of soybeans almost, and 80% of cottons, and most of the canola, and like almost two-thirds of the corn produced in America is gene-altered. And so that's processed into our processed food, and
when you consider how much cotton I eat, you know, it's just a really ridiculous amount.
Is that what cotton mouth is all about? And then it's also fed to the animals. So we, as Americans, you eat a lot of gene-altered food. Why he's coming on the show, why Michael's coming on the show, is to disabuse us of some misinformation. His job is good information. So stay tuned. I think you'll be quite interested at some of the stuff that comes out.
I don't expect we'll agree with every single thing he has to say, but he's going to just try and take some middle ground there.
I have some more interesting statistics on what Americans think about bioengineered foods. You know that of those who claim to have some who say, yeah, I know a little bit about engineered foods, 41% say they'd like to see more stringent rules, and only 16% say there's already too much regulation. Cloned animals, you ready? Among those who said they had no objection to eating genetically engineered food, right, 34% with animal cloning, while 51% were saying, all right, genetically engineered, but not that engineered.
But don't go crazy.
So 51% were not comfortable eating cloned food. Now, that's not to say it's unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to say that a majority of Americans are uncomfortable with it and would rather not.
You know, we're not going to talk about cloned animals really later in the show, but I do want to touch upon it now for just a moment or two. You know, one of the studies I read, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me right at this very moment, but one of the studies I read, one of the people who are answering to people who say, I don't want to eat cloned animals, one of the things I read was, you know, cloning animals isn't really going to change very much about how we reproduce food, about how we, the animals that you eat. And I actually think that's not that far from the truth. And the reason I feel that way is because cloned animals, one of the things that's going to happen if you begin to clone animals is, and one of the concerns that Francis and I have about it is, you're going to, there'll be less biodiversity. There'll be fewer animals in the gene pool if all the animals have the same genetics.
Right.
But some of that is going on already because what has happened with some of the factory farms out there is, we're reducing the gene pool.
Right. Many and inbreeding.
By inbreeding, exactly, and breeding with exactly the same genetics,
right,
or nearly the exact, you know.
You find the most optimal pig, and what they do now is to get graphic, they take the male's reproductive juices, right, and they split them up into, you know, minute quantities. You only need a few, a little bit to impregnate a sow, and they'll impregnate, you know, hundreds of sows from or thousands of sows from one superior pig, and that leads to a lot of genetic similarity. Well, you know, genetic engineering takes that to the next level.
Right. It actually perfects that process.
Right.
Because what the idea now is, and how a lot of these factory farms work, is you get two pigs that are producing pretty much exactly the type of pig that you want. And so you keep having, you know, again, that male pig and the female pigs with similar genetics, you keep having them reproduce and reproduce. So you get very standardized pork production, for instance, and we're talking about pigs right now, but very standardized pork production and very little biodiversity. But there are a lot of risks that come with that, and I'm afraid that, and like I said, cloning takes this to the next step, to the next degree.
We buy our Berkshire pigs from a farm where they run around, and they're you know, the mother and father get together and they make new pigs and they have a little pig family, and that leads to a lot of genetic diversity on a particular farm. On corporate agribusiness, what they call confinement animal feeding operations, where 99% of the pork that we have on the market in America is raised, they absolutely keep these pigs inside. And one of the reasons they keep them inside is they keep them inside in as sterile an environment as possible. The people who go into work in these pig barns, they wear surgical masks and the booties and the caps on their head for the hair, because they're so afraid with these pigs that are all genetically identical. You know, one pig disease, one little bit of flu, and it wipes out, you know, 30,000 pigs. And one of the things we're trying to maintain that corporate agribusiness doesn't seem to value is biodiversity, is many different, even if it's, they're the pigs, the same breed of pig, many different kinds of DNA.
So I guess my point here is that the actual process of cloning, you know, you want to talk about, there's a religious faction that will tell you that it's just morally wrong. There are lots of different arguments against cloning. But my biggest argument with putting them into the food source is exactly that. You're going to, because what's going to happen is sooner or later somebody's going to say, that's it, that's the perfect pig, that's it, that's the perfect cow, that's what we want to reproduce over and over and over and over and over again. And what that will ultimately lead to is a lack of biodiversity, and that's a huge risk. And forget about flavor again, and forget about the fact that you know, I want one steak to taste slightly different than the next steak to taste slightly different than the next steak.
As if it came from an animal on a farm.
Right. Forget about that. What my bigger concern there is, and I think the more global concern there is, that if every cow is exactly the same, and something comes along and can kill one cow, it automatically thereby can kill every single cow on the planet, and that's such a huge concern.
Well, and my major concern is, look, I think that there are regulatory issues here that we need to debate as a society, and I agree with you. But I think the first step, and even the more frightening step, is that what corporate agribusiness wants to do is they want to be able to introduce these things to the market without labeling
them. Tell you.
We already have genetically modified plant products like soybeans and corn that isn't labeled. In Europe, it's labeled. And when they label it, people don't buy it. So in America, they're like, well, we don't want to label it because then nobody will buy it. But you know, there's this great website out there called the Center for Consumer Freedom or something like that. But, you know, they're an industry front group, and they're trying to take away your consumer freedom, because if you have freedom but you don't have information, you don't have any freedom.
Right.
Hey, well, we're going to be talking to somebody who knows a lot more about this than we do. Michael Fernandez, the executive director of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology, will join us in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Now, Michael Fernandez is the executive director of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology. Now, the initiative was established in 2001 to be an independent and objective source of credible information on agricultural biotechnology for the public, for the media, and for policymakers. It's funded through a grant from the Pew Charitable Trusts to the University of Richmond. The initiative advocates neither for nor against agricultural biotechnology. Instead, it's committed to providing information and encouraging debate on dialogue so that consumers and policymakers can make their own informed decisions.
Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
You know, it's funny. We always, when we talk to people, we like to know where they're coming from. And so sometimes we'll talk to, you know, environmentalists, and we're real clear about that. And very often we're talking to people from the industry who have a vested interest in the outcome of the debate, you know. And I think that it's important that people understand where they're coming from. Now, there's a lot of debate in America and throughout the world on some of the advances in biotechnology like cloning or genetically modified foods. And it strikes us that there's a lot of misinformation out there, whether it's industries only talking about the things that are favorable about it or others only talking about the things that are maybe unfavorable about it. Is there a lot of misinformation out there?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's in large measure why the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology was created, to be a source of reliable information and to be in the middle as the debate gets increasingly polarized. You know, you're either totally for or totally against. I mean, the Pew Charitable Trusts who started this project were really looking for a voice in the middle.
Now, what are the Pew Charitable Trusts? I mean, I hear the name all the time, and why did they decide that this was important in this issue? How did this particular initiative come about?
Well, the Pew Charitable Trust is a big foundation. I mean, it's like the Ford Foundation or the Rockefeller Foundation. And they fund a lot of different kinds of projects. They have had an historical interest in issues around the sort of the interface of science and technology and society. So that's sort of their historical interest. And this particular project came about in the late 1990s and then was officially launched in 2001. And it was really, again, seeing a lot of what was happening, particularly in Europe, where the debate was getting sort of increasingly divisive. And they were really looking for, again, a voice in the middle, somebody who could provide information and education in a balanced and, you know, sort of neutral way.
But shouldn't the FDA really be that voice in the middle, or is there something that doesn't
work there?
Well,
the FDA, the regulatory agencies, clearly have a role to play in terms of informing the public about their decisions, but it's not really their job to sort of inform the public about new technology in general. I mean, they're making decisions about whether particular products can be approved or not, but, you know, I don't think their role is as much as sort of, you know, basic education.
Well, and my view is, and I don't know if Mark shares this view or not, but my view is that the FDA is increasingly owned by, you know, the people they're supposed to be regulating, and I think a lot of the American public believes the same thing. In the most recent poll, asked which sources they trust a great deal for information about gene-altered foods, most people ranked friends and family at the highest. At 37% of people said they ranked friends and family first. Only 29% of Americans said that they trusted the FDA, and that's a drop. In 2001, that was 41% of Americans trust the FDA. Now 29%, which means that, you know, I'll extrapolate a little, you know, 71% think like I do, that they're dirty, rotten bastards. No, that they're, you know, less than impartial, let's say.
There certainly has been a change over time, as you pointed out. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with some of the other things that FDA does, too, about, you know, drug approvals and other kinds of issues that not necessarily just specifically genetically engineered food, but there's, you know, definitely an erosion of trust, I think, in the government in general, not just FDA.
Well, but especially with the FDA and the Department of Agriculture, there's a tremendous revolving door. I mean, you're the president of a major food, you're the PR guy for a major food company, and then you become a regulator for the FDA, and then you go back to work being the PR guy at a food company. You know, that changes people's perceptions. But not to bash on the FDA too much.
We can.
Because I think we've done a fine job of it so far. People feel people have a lot of misconceptions about bioengineered foods. I mean, one of the major misconceptions is a lot of people feel that they've never had a bioengineered food, but 89% of soybeans, 83% of cotton, and 61% of corn is genetically engineered.
In this country.
So almost everybody in America has had genetically engineered food. What are some of the other misconceptions people have about bioengineered foods?
Yeah, that's clearly a big one. You know, as you said, most people... In our poll, like 26% of the people said they thought they had eaten, you know, food that was derived from a genetically engineered crop. And as you say, you know, virtually every processed food has something that comes from corn or soybeans in it. So
in America, not in Europe.
Yeah, yes. So everybody in the U.S. has eaten, you know, some form of a genetically engineered food.
And frankly, it doesn't even necessarily have to be processed to be for you to be having genetically modified foods.
Right. Most of the corn and soybeans that are grown in the United States are... either fed to animals as animal feed, or they're, you know, processed into some other thing. We don't eat a lot of soybeans directly, and frankly, even corn, other than sweet corn, we don't eat a lot you know, directly.
We're going to take a small break, and I want to come back and finish with this question. I want to ask you to elaborate a little further on some of the other misconceptions people might have about bioengineered foods that you can talk about and maybe correct us on. That's Michael Fernandez of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Michael Fernandez, who's the executive director of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology. Now, Michael, we had started to talk about before the break some of the misconceptions that most Americans have where they're misinformed about where there's misinformation about bioengineered foods. What are some of the other misconceptions people operate under?
Well, another thing, I think people assume that when you're talking about genetically engineered food, that there are a whole lot of different foods out there. And it really is corn, soybeans, canola, are the main crops. For the vast majority of like fruits and vegetables, all those kinds of foods, not genetically engineered. So I think that's one thing people, again, are sort of confused about. I think in general people are confused. What does genetically engineered mean? What does genetically modified mean? If you ask people about that, a lot of people are going to talk about things like, seedless watermelons and, some of those kinds of things, which are generated through some, high-tech breeding methods, but don't involve, genetic engineering.
They're hybrids, not necessarily.
Why don't you define for everyone what genetic engineering is? When I want to genetically engineer a watermelon or a soybean or a piece of corn, how do I go about it? With high-tech crossbreeding, we make hybrids, using the reproductive apparatus of the plant. But how does genetic engineering differ from that?
That's a good question. And basically, the fundamental thing is that you're going to take a piece of DNA, a gene, something that has a trait that you want, and you're going to take it, and you can find that from any source. So it could come from another plant, it could come from an animal, it could come from a bacterium, and you can take that gene, that piece of DNA, out of whatever it is that it's coming from, and you basically shoot it into a plant cell.
Usually using a virus, right?
Sometimes they use a virus. You can actually physically, shoot it in. There's a gene gun, it's called. You actually, shoot it in. And then that DNA gets incorporated into the DNA of your plant of interest, of corn, soybeans, whatever it is, and becomes then part of that, the DNA in that plant. But that DNA can come from any source. So
like, that's how you get, like, you cross the jellyfish and the pig, and you get a pig that glows in the dark.
Yeah, more or less.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm for gene gun...
Or boneless pig, one or the other.
I'm for gene gun control. We'll be talking more about that after the news.
I understand that's how Gene the Dancing Machine died.
With Michael Fernandez, Executive Director of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology, we can be ridiculous with the most serious of topics, can't we? Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today our guest is Michael Fernandez. He's the executive director of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology. The initiative advocates neither for nor against agricultural biotechnology, but instead it's committed to providing information and encouraging debate and dialogue so that consumers and policymakers can make their own informed decisions. You are consumers, and you vote for policymakers, so listen up, everybody. We're talking with Michael. Now, Michael, you concern yourself with a lot of the regulatory issues. What are some of the issues that face our government? A lot of these regulatory issues are hotly debated within the agencies of the United States government. They're hotly debated on the floors of the various legislatures and cities and counties and states. And actually, most of Europe, almost all the countries of Europe, are adamantly opposed and want to keep bioengineered foods out of their food supply and out of their food chains, and they're risking their trade relationship with the United States. If they're so against it, why are they so against it and we're okay with it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it does get to some of the issues about our current regulatory system. And basically, our system was built on we're going to use the existing laws and statutory authorities that were out there long before biotechnology was ever even imagined to regulate these products. So if it looks like a food, it's a food. We're going to regulate it like a food. If it looks like a pesticide, we're going to regulate it like a pesticide.
What if it's a pesta-food?
Well, it becomes complicated.
Well, and here's where it does become complicated, because the largest use of bioengineered produce is in corns and soybeans. These big companies keep talking about how they're gonna bioengineer food so that it makes feeds the world. Except the first step is they bioengineer foods to be resistant to the pesticides that they spray. So you can put their pesticide resistant food in your field, and then you can buy their Roundup from Monsanto and spray it all over everything, and it won't kill this.
It'll kill everything but their corn.
So, you do have it is a food. That is treated to be resistant to a certain pesticide. There are other bioengineered crops that are engineered to create their own pesticide. Isn't the regulatory apparatus that doesn't look at bioengineered foods as a separate thing? Aren't they inadequate to deal with? What do you do with a food that's also a pesticide?
Right, and that's a big issue. I mean, basically, you have two different agencies, and sometimes three different agencies, in fact, for these foods, both USDA, EPA, and the Department of the FDA all have, some piece of this. So you've got issues about coordination. You've got issues where different laws provide for a different standard. How do you determine what's safe? So that's a real issue. And frankly, for the ones that we have out there now, the herbicide-tolerant crops, the insect-resistant crops, those are relatively straightforward. It becomes even more complicated when you start talking about crops that don't fit into one category very easily. There is a lot of work going on to genetically engineer crop plants, to produce human pharmaceuticals. They're not for people to consume, to eat, but you would, harvest the crop and extract the pharmaceutical out of it, and there are some advantages. It's cheaper. It's it's a way to get some kinds of medicines produced more easily. On the other hand, if you're using a food crop, you really want to be pretty sure that you're not getting that into the food supply.
But you're not getting the spermicide into the food supply, into the corn supply.
Right. And those kinds of products they're sort of category busters. I mean, is it a food? Is it a medicine? Is it a dessert topping? Is it a floor wax?
But by definition, our farms can't be laboratories. They're outside. They things cross pollinate. Things get into one another.
I mean, here is our biggest fear is, look, when you're creating something like this, you're creating a corn or a plant that can reproduce itself, that's pollen blows in the wind, and we have countless examples of when genetically altered crops, which were supposed to be kept on an experimental farm, the pollen blew across or rode on the back of a bee, and it got out. And once it's out in the wild, it can be irreversible.
Well, the problem is we need to genetically modify our bees so they only carry the pollen. No, I'm just.
Well, but I mean, isn't the problem?
Don't start.
But isn't that the problem, that once we let this out of the box, you can't put the genie back in the bottle?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about crop plants growing out in a field. they're not wild, right? There are no wild relatives of corn, so it's not like they're going to be the, you know, attack of the killer tomato.
Yeah, but hold on a second.
On the other hand, they do this issue of cross-pollination, of the mixing of crops accidentally. I mean, we have a commodity system that's designed to treat all corn like it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about corn that's now somehow different, that's, you know, specially different, our system is not set up to do that very well. And these incidents, as you mentioned, of things getting mixed together, finding experimental rice that, you know, got into the commercial supply, it's happened with corn. Those are definite issues. So far, it's not been a health concern. I mean, these have been products that haven't been posed any health risk. They're mainly the things that people are caring about are things that, because they're not approved in some countries or they're not approved here. But, you know, you could run into something where you're talking about something that actually posed a real risk.
I don't necessarily agree with whether or not they propose a health risk, but that's neither here nor
right.
there.
Well, I should say that the FDA has determined that they don't pose a health risk.
Yeah, but and the 29% of Americans who trust the FDA are resting assured, but the 71% of us that don't are a little concerned.
So I guess the question is, what do we do?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. Some of this issue about the mixing and things is really kind of an economic issue.
Well, let me crystallize that economic issue and pose this question out to you. You have the case in Canada, but the same laws apply in the United States of Percy Schmeiser, of course, that famous case where Percy Schmeiser did not use genetically modified corn, and Monsanto somehow the genetically modified corn spilled or cross pollinated onto his land. He had never planted it there. It blew in the wind. And Monsanto successfully sued him for using their genetically modified patented canola without their permission because they own the DNA. But Percy didn't even put it there. But once you release something into the wild, you know, if I release a school of fish into a river that's never been, into a lake that's never been there before, and then I sue you because you've got my fish swam into your backyard, that's what I mean by the genie out of the bottle. Percy didn't plant that canola on his property.
That Percy Schmeiser case is actually a lot more complicated, and there's a whole lot of other stuff going on there than the sort of short version of it.
Well,
that particular case aside, I mean, this issue of the mixing of different kinds of crops, of the people talk about sort of the coexistence. Is it possible for different production systems to coexist? That's one that a lot of people are struggling with. I mean, farmers are concerned about it because if they can't sell their crop because it's been, mixed with another crop.
Right.
Food companies are obviously concerned about it if they're trying to meet, you know, customer demands, whether it's overseas or in the U.S. for a certain kind of product.
Well, actually, I think what concerns me more is that food companies in America are striving not to meet customer demands, because most customers, if you poll, want genetically modified foods labeled, and most customers, if they find a genetically modified label, won't buy the food. And food companies are saying we should not have to label our GMO products, because if we do, people won't buy them. And my view is, well, exactly that. If people don't want them, regardless of whether you think it's reasonable or not that people don't want GMO products, you should have to label it and let the consumer have that choice. Does the Pew take a position on that?
We're all about information. We're not about taking positions, but issue is certainly a complicated one. And basically, I mean, it goes back again to this issue of using our existing laws. So,
why is it complicated? There is the overwhelming majority of Americans don't want to eat GMO food. The over superwhelming majority of Europeans don't want to eat GMO food. Yet the companies are. In America have successfully resisted labeling, and they're trying to ram, take labeling laws off the shelves in Europe. That's about information.
And isn't this an information issue? I mean, that's the point.
Yeah, I mean, there are clearly a lot of ways for people to, there are a lot of different ways to get information. It's not clear that, by the way, it's not clear that the overwhelming majority of Americans don't want to eat genetically engineered food. I think most people are unaware that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask them about it, they're certainly less than enthusiastic. And a majority of people will say that they're not in favor of it. that's a little bit, those two things are a little bit different. I don't want to be, you know, splitting hairs too much, but I think that's not the thing that people necessarily are focused on. Most Americans aren't paying a whole lot of attention to this as an issue.
Right. Well, because they don't know it, because it's not labeled, and yeah, we've shown that they think they've never eaten it, so they don't care.
Right.
Right. No, I mean, there's absolutely. I mean, that's certainly one interpretation of the data.
It's actually two, Francis and me.
There you go. There's two. And the labeling thing is, again, as I was saying, going back to sort of the initial decision to use existing statutory authorities, the existing laws. So the FDA labeling requirements for what is mandatory, what you have to have on the label, and they have a standard for what that is. One of the things being, obviously, if you've changed the nature of the thing so that it's no longer a tomato, that's one thing. If you've altered the ingredients in such a way that, you know, requires you to that it would be sort of unexpected, that's another thing.
The third thing is, is something
a material fact?
Well, hold on one second. We have to leave it there. We'll come right back to it. But I would posit that if you have to put a change of ingredients on there, you should have to put a change of genes and genetic structure on there. But that is the debate that we're talking about. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:47.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick. And its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Michael Fernandez, the executive director of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology. And we're talking about labeling bioengineered foods, whether we should or we shouldn't. And you said the third thing that you have to put on the label is if there's, I think you said, a material fact about the food that is
right. Different. I mean, that's sort of part of the standard. And FDA has historically, and in this case also, taken a very narrow definition of sort of what is a material fact. So for some people, some consumers might argue that whether something has been genetically engineered or not is, to me, a material fact. But the way that the FDA has defined that is narrowly about what sort of changes have you made actually to the food itself. Basing on that, on all that decision, what happens is that you know, FDA has taken a position that mandatory labeling is not required.
You know, I have to say, that just stinks of hypocrisy to me. And I know that you're providing information in the center, and I'm taking a side on this debate. What I think is debatable is whether or not genetically modified foods should be allowed, and I would probably argue the point that I don't think they should. I would agree with all of Europe that it shouldn't, but I think that to argue that to genetically modify a tomato to make it resistant to a pesticide or to get it to create its own pesticide or corn or canola or whatever, that's not a material change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I powder it, I have to put that on the label, but if I genetically modify it, I don't. I mean, that's just wacky. I mean, I guess you guys at the Pew Charitable Trust don't use words like wacky.
we try not to.
I use them all the time.
You know, so, I mean, you can draw different kinds of analogies. What if you, crossbred a tomato to make it redder, you know, or something? I mean, if you did the same kinds of things using a different technology,
would you
have to label it?
But technology, crossbreeding is not a technology. You know, a tomato mates with a tomato. You know, one kind of horse with another kind of horse, you know, is fine. But, you know, I cross a horse with a bumblebee, and I think, you know, that's a material fact, you know, that somebody might want to know about.
And you wouldn't want to ride it.
Or maybe you'd make Pegasus, and you would want to ride
it. Yeah, and that's, you know, there's clearly there are a lot of people who make that argument. And that's not, that is not the current policy of the federal government.
I want to ask you a question, and I want to ask your opinion. You may not be able to give me an opinion on this, but I want to ask you, do we need a new governing body? Does somebody else should somebody else be looking at this?
Or
are we in new territory?
Or is anyone proposing that, if you can give us your own opinion on that?
People have proposed that. I mean, there's two things. And one thing, and just in general in terms of our food safety laws, this different agencies having different regulatory authority over different parts and different kinds of food is something that there's general interest in. And there have been proposals in Congress to have a single food safety agency that would be, you know, determining the safety of all foods. So that's one thing. And then obviously genetically engineered foods would fit into that. There have also been proposals in Congress to, you know, create a new kind of authority for genetically engineered foods in particular. I think there's a couple of different ways to think about it. One is that the existing regulatory authorities, the existing laws, do provide all the authority that's necessary to regulate pretty much any kind of genetically engineered food product that you can imagine. But the question is, how are those laws going to be applied?
And if they're not applied equally throughout different categories of food, then you have a huge problem.
Right, and you have an issue, there's definitely an issue of coordination between different authorities. So let's say, for example, I mean, one example is genetically engineered animals, which we don't have yet anywhere on the market. There are a number of different laws that all sort of cover some parts of it, but not all of the animals that you could imagine. And so you have some, you know, you've got issues of, well, if FDA is doing part of it and USDA is doing another part of it, there's that in it. In and of itself,
and
can create problems.
And the way government works, it seems as though the more times you have the ability to say, well, that's not my job, that's their job, and point the finger at the other guy, that's where, you know, no one's watching the chickens in the hen house.
There's definitely this sort of, you know, you got this concern if something falls through the cracks.
Hey, we need to leave it there, Michael. It's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you for coming on the show and talking with us about this very important issue.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Michael.
We'll have you back again and talk to you for another hour. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 14:50. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We were talking with Michael Fernandez of the Pew Initiative on Food and Biotechnology. You know, look, here's the thing that I'm sure is right. We should have to label bioengineered foods so that you as a consumer, even if all the science says it's safe, there are enough consumers out there who are like, I don't care if it's safe. I don't care if you think it's safe. I don't want to have it. And so they should have the consumer choice.
I don't understand that. We have labeled everything that is put into
the
marketplace forever.
Because if they label it, people won't buy it. In Europe, you have to label it, right? Labeling it, here's one of those industry toadies, a guy named Barber from Europa Bio, who's trying to get the labeling laws in Europe rescinded. Here's a quote from him, taken from the New York Times. Labeling has turned out to be a stigma because the public is so frightened and retailers have become easy targets. Look at the Greenpeace website with its list of brands that use GMs, genetically modified foods. We're okay with consumers making a choice, but we're leery because they're scared, and we're labeling identical products. Okay, in other words, we're okay with consumers making a choice, but
as long as they choose us.
Right, but if they don't choose our product, we're not so okay with it. Look, dude, people don't want... And if you can convince people that it's safe, that's fine. But how dare you say, yeah, we can't convince people that it's safe, so we want to not tell them because it's safe. What difference does it make? And it makes a difference. I'm sorry, alter the genetic structure of the food that you're going to feed my kid.
I don't want it.
And you may or may not want it, but you should have that choice as a parent.
I totally agree. I don't understand it. And, you know, the other thing is, I so feel like the government's going to come out and tell us, okay, eat margarine. And then 20 years from now, they're going to say, oh, by the way, butter was better for you than margarine all along.
Okay,
I totally feel like that's where we're headed.
We've banned trans fats in New York City.
Right.
We've banned foie gras in Chicago. But, you know, little family farmers raise ducks for foie gras. And they won't even label in this country. Listen, almost 100% of Americans have eaten genetically modified foods and you don't even know.
Doesn't make sense.
Hope we haven't scared you too much. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.